Hello. 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 So here we are. Today's topic is ADHD. So we've decided to talk about this because both our lives are affected by this. I'm someone whose doctor suspects very much as someone who has ADHD, and also when mentioning that to many people, they always seem very unsurprised by it. And Lucy has been diagnosed officially with having ADHD.
I should say that that was through a charity, so it was done privately.
Okay, yeah, mine. So actually, the reason I haven't been diagnosed, the doctor wanted to refer me. However, I also wanted to take out private healthcare, and I thought by the time, but you know, because the referral process is so long in the NHS,
yeah, it's massive.
I thought I may as well actually get private healthcare and then pay for that and then be referred. Although now I'm probably not going to get that done, it on here. But
no, I think that's fine because you can use pre-existing. I actually did mine through a charity. So in the grand scheme of things, it was relatively cheap. And I say that knowing that it also is a massive expense as well. And I was very lucky that I could do it in that way. And I chose to do it in that way for various different reasons. But yeah. One of the reasons was I felt like it was the final part of a jigsaw to do with my ongoing challenges with my mental health, I suppose. So for me, it was a case of let's just get this done.
Yeah.
But I know that that route isn't always available to everybody. And it can only be described as a quagmire, I think, of trying to get through the NHS kind of process is very difficult, and I'm dealing with that when trying to discuss medication with them. So that can be really, really challenging. But I think one of the interesting things that you said was I feel like that reaction of people's really, really funny.
Yeah, completely. So, no one, they're like, no shit.
Yeah.
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
You've got ADHD. And yeah. It's like, well, yeah, and I remember when one of my godchildren was diagnosed with ADHD a number of years ago, and I remember looking through, not really knowing what it, or not really understanding it. I mean, we're talking probably 10 years ago now, and like reading through it, and I thought, fuck, that sounds familiar. Oh, that feels very familiar. Oh, and me and my friend, the mother of my godchild, was sort of saying, gosh, yeah, these things feel familiar. So I was. And when the doctor went through all the things with me in our consultation, because it was actually about my weight.
Okay, interesting. But I've got some statistics around that.
Oh, good, good. Geek Lucy, Lucy the geek. But basically, I was talking to him about my weight, and then these questions came up, and it sort of reminded me of what I'd read. And I sort of said to him, you're going to say I've got ADHD, aren't you? You know, and he was like, well, yes. And he's the ADHD specialist there. And he was saying there's a real link between, overeating and cravings and women.
Yeah.
And anyway, I've sort of digressed, but...
not at all.
But yeah, I kind of feel... So basically what I'm trying to say is I did sort of have a feeling that I might have it. And yes, I haven't been officially diagnosed with it. I haven't gone for the testing. But I was actually more surprised. I was surprised by how many more people were like, well, yeah, of course you've got ADHD. Like, yeah, like almost like, why would you think otherwise?
Yeah.
You know, and that's quite, which is fine. And I see it as a superpower. If I do have it, which I'm pretty sure I probably do.
Yeah.
But it's funny how it's like, yeah, of course you have it.
I think for me, that just shows how far you've come, because I feel like there used to be an impression of ADHD, like back in the 80s and 90s, it was, you know, the hyperactive boy throwing a chair in the classroom was the kind of vibe of it. And I feel like there's been, I spoke to a lady who was really helpful when I started going through the process. She'd just been through the process. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about that kind of reaction. And I faced it a lot this Christmas, you know. There was a lot of, you know, because I'm quite an open person. I'll tell a person at the bus stop my life story.
Mm. Which so, is you know, quite classic ADHD.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Very completely, open, kind,
like, yeah,
compassionate.
Yeah, you know, very, so like, in tuned with energy. And I believe in being a really open person. I believe what you give, you kind of get. And, you know, so I was really honest with people in my life. You know, a lot that I don't see a lot because it's that annual kind of, you know, seeing people at Christmas. And, you know, being diagnosed with cancer the year before, I never had anyone questioning my diagnosis. It was very much, you know, everyone has ADHD nowadays. And, you know, I find that really interesting. It's like, why do you feel the need to belittle my diagnosis? I didn't pop to the corner shops and get it, you know.
Yeah. You didn't pick up a certificate.
Like a really, I feel like it's a really odd thing. And the lady, sorry to go back to my point, she said, you know, when she comes up against that, oh, it's a real trend, you know, everyone's affected. She said that for her, it's an awakening rather than a trend, because, again, it's a lot of women that have been taught to mask. I can't tell you the amount of times as a child I was told, you know, that's not the way to act. And I feel like it was drummed into us as children to kind of act in a certain way. And, you know, for me, you know, going back to that point that you were making around, you know, you were talking to your doctor because you were actually talking about your weight. You know, I have a really disordered relationship with food. Mm. People with ADHD are much more likely to have addictions.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a really important thing to have diagnosed and to understand why you potentially have struggled in the world a little bit more than others around you, and that's okay. And I think for me that was why it was really important to be diagnosed. And I feel like there is a dangerous narrative that is present in the media around, you know. And the two people that came into my head was, I saw Tony Blair say something around how, you know, there's too much talk around kind of our mental health and, you know, we all just need to kind of get on with it. That kind of like stiff upper lip feeling, which I do. Don't get me wrong. I do appreciate that to a certain extent. And also, the amazing, she must be a dame, I don't know, Joanna Lumley.
I don't know if she is a dame, but she should be if she's not. Yeah. I don't know if she is.
I mean, I want to say that, you know, I absolutely adore her. She is amazing and portrays some incredible characters throughout. Yeah, God. I mean, absolutely fabulous. I'm such a fan.
You can't beat it.
Like, I'm such a fangirl of that programme. I grew up with that programme. Like, I absolutely adore it. And actually,
it's still funny now. It's not dated.
No,
it's one of the few things.
I feel like the fashion is like, whoo. Mm. But yeah, that like, that kind of, that basic humour has definitely, not aged. And she's amazing. And actually, Amanda Land recently.
Yeah.
Which I was a little bit like, I don't know. Do I want to be in Amanda's universe for like that long? For like, what, 6 hours? 6 episodes? 3 hours? Not that's important. But yeah. And when I found out that she was a character within that series, I was like, I'm in. Like, you had me at Joanna, like, you know. So I adore her. But she came out recently and said something around, you know, we're all dull as ditch water, and why are we all talking about our feelings, and, you know, we're just all really dull. And yeah, I get that. But coming from the kid that was labeled like the problem child, like, I am the child. I mean, I can tell you some awful stories from my childhood that my mother kind of reels out around, you know. I'll talk about one in the swearing episode that we're going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I push buttons and I, you know, I challenged. And to understand now why I did some of those things and why I'm kind of so impulsive and why I really struggle with self-care and all of those things is so important
and
to me.
There is something I think that's calming when you do get a diagnosis, or you get told you're something that I remember having such bad anxiety, and I'm susceptible to having anxiety and always have been, and hypersensitivity, and I think that's where my ADHD really surfaces. I was sort of a problem child, but not quite. But my thing, I think, was more in the emotional side of things. And but I remember, you know, going to the doctor and him saying, actually, I think you're suffering from really bad anxiety, and I recommend that you we medicate this. And there was something just so like, that was just such a relief, where it was kind of like, oh my God, this is over and above, like, this is outside of the of me. This, it's sort of like it's an issue. It's not me. It's an, like, actually being able to label it sort of as being sort of anxiety, quite, you know, possibly depressed, meant that I just remember feeling like, oh, thank fuck for that.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, it's not just, it's me. It's an actual problem, and we can fix it, or we can now treat it.
Yeah.
And I think there definitely a comfort around having a diagnosis when you are suffering.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, it's that thing, isn't it? Instagram is so good at serving me ADHD, like, reels and memes now. But there was one that, like, loads have resonated with me, but one that was something about, you know, I've been trying to be a horse and now I've realized I'm a zebra. And it is that thing of, okay, my brain just works in a different way and it's not broken and there's nothing wrong with me. You know, being told as a child that there's something wrong with you is really, like, hard thing to hear,
yeah,
I think.
I've actually definitely had
and,
that. Yeah.
You know, I think as a child, I was told that a lot, and kind of wading through that as an adult and realizing, you know, to go back to the research, there's so much research out there. I found this really interesting report, which was probably the most comprehensive because it spanned from 2000 to 2018. So just shy of 2 decades.
Yeah.
And used like this database of medical research data of 7 million individuals. And like the increases are just like insane. So, you know, the rates are increasing. And I feel like it's good to have open and frank conversations because there are people who are struggling out there.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, naturally it would increase, wouldn't it? Because I think at the beginning of that research, people would be sort of poo-pooing it slightly and putting it down to bad behaviour or unable to concentrate or, you know, all those other sort of very 80s, 90s sort of phrasing.
Yeah.
And I guess now people are actually, you know, mental health is something that's being looked at under the telescope so much more. Or magnifying glass, not telescope. I think it is something that people are thankfully talking about.
Yeah.
And there's the stigma's sort of gone now. Whereas that wasn't something, you know, there were loads of things that people want to be depressed, they want to be this, they want to be that. Like, it was very much brushing it under the carpet and just getting on with it, or seeing someone as weak, or, you know, or fearing the perception of being weak if you opened up about how you actually felt.
No, and we are marching forward, aren't we? I think that's the one thing that we have to, you know, collectively pat ourselves on the back for, is we do keep going as a human race. Like, we're, you know, and I think there is much more of an understanding, as you say. But, you know, that report brings out issues around healthcare inequalities and medical poverty. And again, that goes back to my point around, I was really lucky and fortunate to be in a place where I could, and I say this with inverted commas, like, pay for my diagnosis, and not everyone has access to that. And also it brought out that with the rise in ADHD comes the need even a greater need. And I don't want this podcast to be me banging on about the NHS all the time, but you know, there needs to be a framework of support.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm in a, you know, a back and forth with my GP at the moment about, you know, potentially exploring medication. I've actually gone down the more natural and private route at the moment. But even trying to have that conversation to mean that I can, you know, be prescribed on the NHS is just a struggle.
Mm.
And that's just incredibly frustrating.
Completely. And if you think we're in London, you know, we're in a, yeah, we're in a part of the world that gets quite a lot of money to, you know, because I mean, it drives me nuts. The thing that upsets me the most about the NHS is this whole, you know, if you're in the right area, I mean, even within London, if you're in the borough of Lambeth, you know, there's different funding to the borough of Kensington and Chelsea or Westminster or Croydon or Brent or, you know, it's, and I think that's you in London where there is more money often going towards these services than in more rural areas or other parts of the country, which is totally wrong.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it should be, you know, X amount per person, not which borough or county you end up in or whatever. But, you know, that's you struggling here,
yeah,
in the capital.
Yeah.
Like, you know, imagine some in a more rural, more economically deprived area. How shit it must be for them, really.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It is such a... I hate the phrase broken Britain. Like, I really, really do, but... There are some such massive flaws in some of our most fundamental kind of social organizations. And I know there's just so many different reasons. It's so, so complicated. But again, just going back to trying to kind of wade through the quagmire of trying to get support can sometimes just feel completely brutal and just so demoralizing, especially to people who struggle with organization and basic self-care.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, all of those things that are really, really sparked. I sometimes get to the point where my husband deals with a lot of my medical admin and trying to get to services and try and get some sort of reasonable response.
Yeah.
which sounds crazy, doesn't it, that you feel like you're asking for such basic things, but yeah, it's just, it can be really, really challenging.
Mm.
But that's probably not everyone's experience.
Hopefully
as well.
Not. That's,
and
hopefully
I think the thing
not.
Is once you do crack into those services, they can be absolutely amazing. I think it's really interesting that point around whether it would be better or worse, like rural versus, what's the opposite to rural? Urban. Because it's a completely different, well, it's not completely different, but a friend of mine is having to access in the West Country services for eating disorders. Mm. And they've actually been seen in record lightning.
Well, that's great time. To hear. Yeah.
And I wonder whether, when this happened, I wondered whether that would have been the same elsewhere in London. I feel like it would be harder to access those services. I feel like, certainly through my GP, I feel like my GP is literally like a baseball player. And
you are like
a baseball, and they are, from the moment you enter and you're talking to reception, and I mean enter, like whether you're talking to them on the phone or whatever, or email, or whether you go in, they are just trying to bat you away.
See, I've got the complete opposite experience.
Who are
with
you
my
with?
GP.
Are you with Auckland?
I'm with Pimlico Health at the Marvin, and I have to plug them actually because I've been with them for over 20 years and they are the best practice in the world. So it'd be interesting to see how they respond. But that's in Westminster.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, again, I just sort of feel, and actually it's funny because I get lots of emails through that I know other friends sort of in Lambeth or whatever don't get. So it's, yeah,
like to
I
do
can't
as
actually
well.
Think of one now, but you know, just offering certain services yeah. and things and health, you know, advisors and I don't know, courses or groups and stuff.
That's amazing.
You know, if I talk to someone who's a Lambeth GP, they won't necessarily have got that, which is awful. Yeah, everyone yeah. should. I just, that's where I feel everyone just should be getting the same service. And yes, I know more money goes, as I said earlier, it sort of contradicts what I'm about to say, but yeah, more money goes into the services. So you like to think that, or you assume then, not like to think, but you assume then that the service is better in those areas. But actually, maybe, you know, where we are in London, we're more overwhelmed. And actually, maybe in the West Country, she has got it super quick.
It did feel like it was lightning quick, but yeah. And I didn't research this topic.
Oh well, but it should be fair. Like every single person. Bottom line is, every single person in the UK should be entitled to exactly the same healthcare. It shouldn't matter. It shouldn't be a postcode lottery, which it seems to be.
I was thinking, thinking you could operate maybe a points-based system. Like, could you have a certain number of, like, NHS points that you had to use? And you could use that on, like, secondary therapies as well, like acupuncture and things like that. Like, the reason I've said that is because I think where I struggle with the NHS, and I don't want this to become like NHS bashing, because I think the NHS is amazing. One of my best friends in the world works in the NHS. Well, two of them actually work within the, like, I love the NHS.
Yeah, same. I think it's the thing to be the most, I think it's Britain's best thing. Like, and Erin Bevan setting that up was amazing.
But yes, name check there. He or she?
He.
Amazing. But it is fundamentally, like, I feel like it's like limping, like it's a really ill patient.
Yeah,
just kind of like limping along. And everyone that I speak to that works in the NHS is like at breaking point. And yeah, I know we're coming off the back of COVID, but I think coming from organisations, you know, like Unilever and De Beers, if an organisation isn't working, then you, and isn't providing the service that it's meant to provide, which we're talking about, it is such a postcode, it therefore it isn't providing a great service, needs to be fundamentally like changed and really restructured.
And
totally tough agree. Decisions need to be made. And I feel like where I struggle is when I talk to my friends who work within the NHS and say, what's the chat in the NHS? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, mate, what's going on? Like, if I worked there, just like, nothing. Like, we don't talk like that. We're all little organisations that don't kind of communicate. I started looking into how, you know, like the NHS is structured, and that, you know, you go into like such a quagmire there. But I feel like that's maybe it's, you know, so complicated that that's why no one is kind of grabbing the bull by the horns, is that the right saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's such a huge, and it services so many, like, where the hell do you start? But you've got to start somewhere. Like, it has to become better for people. You know, there were in the last 5 years or so, do you remember there were like all these queues for dentists and stuff? People weren't even people didn't have dentists to see. And
I feel like the dentists have got their shit together though. Like, my son's had a problem with his dental stuff, and we have been shipped off to King's in Camberwell, and it's like there's like they've like set up wards basically of like junior dentists who are overseen by a more senior qualified dentist, and like literally they are churning the numbers through there now. But I think you're right. Like, I feel like a few years ago, there was a massive problem with dentists.
Yeah.
And I don't have that much experience with dentists, because my brother's convinced actually that my mum got some special, he always goes on about this, and my mum, it's one of those stories that my mum's like, yeah, I don't remember this, William. Like, are you sure you didn't dream it? He reckons we got some sort of special, like, what's the word? Like, gel kind of thing put on our teeth as youngsters, and that's why neither of us have any fillings.
I don't
know if that is an actual thing. Maybe it was like back in the, maybe that's where my cancer came from. Maybe it's like in the 80s, they were putting like some carcinogenic, like liquid gel type thing on our teeth. I can't remember how we got onto that. Sorry.
I know, because I think we were talking about the NHS and then we went to, and then I mentioned the fact that people were queuing for dentists. In fact, I've had all my mercury fillings taken out and replaced with white. Because there was this whole thing about
mercury.
Isn't there mercury in the silver fillings or something?
Are you actually shitting me?
I haven't researched it, and I might be talking a load of crap here, but I was told they're not good to have those sort of silver fillings. So I've had all mine changed.
I didn't know that. I actually, when James and I first got married, we had no money because he'd started his business and he needed a filling. He begged me to get the white one. And I was like, no, we can't afford it. And I made him get a silver one. He was like, please, it's really big, Lucy. And I was like, no, you're getting the silver one. It was really mean. And it's like more than half his tooth, and now he has this big metal filling, and now I'm really worried that it has mercury. Well, no, like back in the day? Are we talking 80s?
It was enough. I can't even remember what it was now, but it was enough for me to think, shit, I need to go and have them all changed. And then I was worried about actually the movement of them and changing them. Would that cause any issues? But the dentist did say to me, it's better to have the white ones. And I'm sure it's mercury or something. There was something. We'll have to research it and put people's minds at rest, because I actually can't remember now at all.
I'll do it. We will get back to you on that.
But
one.
I think just bringing it back to ADHD, yes, which is what this is about. Do we have any more to say about it?
I mean, in terms of research, I went down a complete and utter wormhole.
Right.
I forget how much I do love researching. But there's definitely a correlation between addictions and ADHD. And that for me is why it's important. The other thing I was thinking actually is, do I want to get my son tested?
Because
this is a big thing, actually. He is definitely presenting with certain challenges that I had. So oversensitivity is a massive one.
Yeah.
Emotional dysregulation is a massive one.
Yeah.
I probably, with everything that I've been saying, I probably should be trying to get him diagnosed and get the support. Because I do feel like it would have been quite a different experience for me if I had been diagnosed as a child. But there's something that's also stopping me. I think my husband is very, like, he doesn't like labels.
Yeah, that's, funnily enough, we're going through exactly the same thing. Because for exactly those reasons, you know, that are presenting themselves, oversensitivity, you know, not being able to regulate emotions.
Yeah.
And all the things that I feel I suffered with,
and we still probably struggle with.
Yeah, definitely. So yesterday I felt like utter shit. Really teary, really had a terrible morning with Gabriella getting her to school. Was like, came home, was just feeling really emotional. And then today, absolutely fine. I'm sure hormones have got something to do with it too.
Well, it's just been the new moon. So yeah, that's true.
Do you know, the more I hear that, actually, the last time it was a new moon, someone said the same. So maybe I am affected by that.
I was actually on my morning, what's it called, constitutional, which I always thought meant if you went to the toilet in the morning, but actually means going for a walk, which I didn't know that. But I was thinking, what were we just talking about?
We were talking about, about hormones and emotion, new moon.
I was thinking on my morning constitutional that we should really live by the moon. Like, we really should. Like, why did we move to that calendar? Who decided that?
I don't know.
Because surely that's what Stonehenge is about. Is, you know, the whole, like, oh, what's Stonehenge about? It was about celebrating the fucking sun and moon and living by the sun and moon. No. And I just feel that is so much more natural. Like, I'm definitely, I've got a moon journal. It's my second year. It's a beautiful book. And I know how much of a middle class wanker that makes me sound.
No.
And the first one, which I bought last year, I filled in for like a month every single day. And I was like so proud of myself. And then I basically got too much and I just went, oh, that's too much commitment. And then I didn't fill it in for like the rest of the year and felt an incredible shame for wasting money on it. But I decided to go in again for year two, and I have, and I'm not filling it in every day by any stretch of the imagination, but it's definitely helping me get into a different rhythm. And I think rhythm is something that I've always struggled with in life. And maybe that does go back to ADHD.
Yeah, I do. But
I feel like I do have a different rhythm. There was a really interesting book, actually, sorry, about, there's a theory that people with ADHD are more like hunters, and that's like our DNA was more like hunter-gatherer, and right. Now we don't live by that anymore. Like, say for example, really great in crisis situations, we like are constantly looking at different things. Like at the moment I'm looking at a crow outside the window as we're kind of having this conversation, because he's like sitting there and he's quite interesting. But yeah, and he's really, anyway, so yeah, that was my point.
So it's your hunter gatherer.
I'm a hunter. I'm your looking hunter at gatherer the crow. Is I was gonna,
hunting
I was
the crow. Gonna, hunting the crow.
I was gonna get the crow, but I think we've pretty much covered everything that I kind of wanted to cover. I feel like that was quite a heavy episode.
I mean, we are talking about ADHD and diagnosis, so it wasn't ever going to be that jolly,
that's
was
true.
It?
That's true.
But I think it's really hard at the moment, isn't it? Because I think one of the reasons I'm also not getting Gabriella tested is I'm almost slightly, and myself even, like actually going for the
diagnosis.
It's because I do feel like a lot of people are thinking, oh, who the fuck hasn't got ADHD? You know, and all of that sort of thing, which brings us back to where you started about people sort of belittling the diagnosis.
It's just such bullshit, though.
I know, completely. And you know, it has made, when I find myself, when I'm talking about it, internally, I'm sort of a bit like, oh God, do they think, you're jumping on a bandwagon? But I don't think so at all. And I think actually we just need to sort of stand firm. You've already been diagnosed and you need to just like run with it and be empowered by it.
And I
definitely need to not worry about what
people
think.
Do you know what? I am, and I don't know whether this is what it is, but I feel like since being diagnosed with cancer, I'm just a little bit like, fuck you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, no, this is me and this works for me. Like, I was thinking about it the other night, and we need to move on to bollocks of the week, but
yeah.
I was thinking, you know, when you go through the ADHD assessment, it makes you look back a lot. And I remembered, so one of the questions is around kind of compulsive thoughts and compulsive behaviours. And from a very young age, because I moved around a lot as a child, and I remember the bedroom where I used to first do like quite a nightly ritual and that I had to do. And, you know, it used to really stress me out. And that's kind of anxiety and OCD and all of those problems, which presented from such an early age.
Yeah.
And actually, do you know what? My diagnosis isn't hurting anyone. And I just feel like it's such a, like, oh, it just really winds me up. It's like the trans debate, isn't it? When people go, oh yeah, but trans people are using it to get access to women's prisons. Mm, and it's honestly, like, just because some fucking dickhead is stuck on a wig and some lipstick does not mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel
totally.
Like it just boils it down to a really like stupid and ill thought through and ignorant place. Mm. And it's just like, do you know what? Actually listen to the people that are being diagnosed.
Yeah, and don't just tell them. Don't.
You know, it just winds me up. And do you know what? Usually it's coming from people that potentially, you know, have someone in their life that maybe, I don't know where it comes from actually, but I just feel like there's no need for it. But I do want to move on to bollocks of the week, because I have a really good one.
Go on then, you go first.
But I will also just say a couple of things. So we have actually had people listen to episode one, the pilot, haven't we?
Oh yes, we have.
And my husband didn't have much to say on it. He said it was good, that's good praise from him.
Yeah.
But he did say that it was when we were talking about the racist lady who was like, where are you from? It was the most senior lady in waiting to the Queen. So yeah. He wanted to just clarify that point. Oh, actually, I haven't actually told you this as well, but my daughter Dorothy wanted me to do a massive shout out to her and say how amazing she was. So I totally forgot about that, and I can't believe I remembered it at the end, so I'm not going to be in trouble. But my bollocks of the week was actually really traumatizing. I haven't spoken about it for a few days, but we have, as most people do, various different bins for our recycling.
Yeah.
And we had, do you remember last week we had some like real like biblical rain?
Yeah.
It was like a couple of days where it was biblical, and I was bringing in the recycling bin that doesn't have a lid. It was a design fault, and none of them do. We got new ones, and they crash and burnt. The lids went within a matter of weeks.
There was here, actually.
There was a lot. Are you Croydon?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of chat on our WhatsApp group. Like, it blew up about the bins.
Yeah.
Like, and it is the one that you want. It's the cans, the glass, and that one. Anyway, I was bringing the bin back in.
Yeah.
And they just been. So it was quite empty at the bottom. And what I hadn't realised in my haste was that it was kind of like swilling around a bit. So I kind of put the bin into where it goes, plopped the recycling in, and bin juice jumped up and went in my face. And it went in my mouth.
Oh,
I know. And it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And it was horrifying. But I came back in, and my two youngest were sitting on the sofa watching something on TV, and I just cried at them. It was like, bin juice went in my mouth. My friend said, did you not go and wash your mouth out? I was like, no!
What did you
do that? I was absolutely traumatised. I just cried. And then, yeah, my husband got home and said I was probably going to end up with dysentery, which I didn't even really know what that meant. But anyway, so that was mine, and it was really traumatic.
It does sound really traumatic.
What's yours?
I'm just mine. Well, I've got kind of, obviously we had Trump being a complete twat to Zelensky this week, so that's definitely and then the other
political
thing,
and mine was about binge. I didn't speak about Mama Ru either, which was why binge juice was really funny, because it made me think of Drag Race UK.
Because
a lot of bin juice on that last series.
Oh,
a lot.
I didn't watch it.
I can't remember what it was the person that went on to win it, and I can't even remember, but there was a lot of bin juice chat. And I didn't even say that.
It keeps
Yours is really political.
No, it's not. No, I've got two, but I think that just needed a mention because Trump is such a twat.
I just can't even.
But also, so even. My mind, so I have developed, especially since having Gabriella, an issue for fast drivers on my road, and like now I just do it without even like on the, you know, we're on the school run part walk, and before I know it, I'm like waving my arms going, slow down, you prick, you know, and like really kind of, and with other parents watching, which is a bit shit. And it just comes out. I just can't help it, and it's always either you prick or you twat, and I can't control that. It's like an innate thing. But this week I did it. I did it once and to someone I know, which I didn't realise at the time. And then today there's this one guy in a black Porsche, white male, black Porsche, KR67, KD67, something. Anyway, I won't say the full registration. However, I've noticed him a few times driving up and down the house.
You're like literally naming and shaming.
Yeah, fuck him.
With
honestly,
the number plate.
Driving up and down the road like an absolute wanker. Anyway, today I waved him down and told him, but then I also happened to know him too.
No.
So I was like, so I got all like wavy, and I think he thought I wanted to sort of say hello because he's driven so fast past the house in the past anyway. And then I just waved him down, and then I sort of looked at him and thought, oh shit, I know you. And suddenly like sort of cowardly, like locked in. And then suddenly I was like, you're driving too fast, and I've seen you do it loads. Whatever, I can't even remember. I need to ask my friends who I was with. But yeah, bollocks of the week is obviously Trump, and the fact that I have verbally abused a couple of people that I turns out I know for driving like twats down my road. But it's unnecessary.
Can I say a couple of things on that? Context. You do live on a road that is used as like a throughway. A main road.
It's not a main road.
But it is a busy road. It's one of those roads where you have to kind of come in and come out, and people should not be speeding.
People use it as a back. But I'm...
I love the fact that you either call them, did you say prick
and then twat? Or twat. Prick seems to come out more than
twat. Because you can't say twat. Like, I once really offended a guy that I worked with said that someone was a twat. And he didn't report me, but he got very close to reporting me because apparently it's a really offensive word.
Is it?
That is one of our episodes, actually. It's going to be swearing.
Yeah, we'll leave
so
it
so maybe
swearing.
We'll come
but
back on to
no,
that.
No, anyway,
apparently
I didn't.
I love swearing, but I love that. And, you know, we didn't even really even talk about some of the, like, ways that my ADHD can explode and getting myself in situations where I swear at people and show my emotions in a very expressive way is definitely one that, is a constant source of amusement to people that I know and love.
Yeah, it definitely brings out the worst in me when people are driving like that. It's a 20 mile an hour road. Don't do it, Lucy.
This is really, really uncomfortable, but I do actually really want to be open and frank in this podcast, and I don't want to censor myself too much, but my husband told me yesterday that I have another speeding ticket. Just gone down to 6 points and now I'm back up to 9, baby.
That's so annoying.
I know, and I don't even know where it was or anything, and that is not, it's not an excuse. Kids, don't speed. It's silly. It's really silly. And I need to, I'm grabbing your arm now. But I need to do some sort of hypnotherapy or something for my driving. No. I'm an incredibly impulsive driver, which is to do with my ADHD. I need to sort that out. But we need to go.
Yeah, we do.
It's time to go.
I just on that, if it's any consolation, I've had my license for like 27 years or something. Yeah. And I got my first speeding ticket, and I used to drive very fast. And then speed awareness course, and then I got another one within like a week. And it's, do you know what? It's only 20 and 22, 23. Having said that, now I've done my speed awareness course, I honestly, it makes a difference. And now I've done it, I actually am so much squarer about it.
I am not into conspiracy theories at all, but I do kind of have a conspiracy theory that if you do go on awareness, or you think you kind of get up a tier, and I really think that they like give you tickets to like, maybe, no, you're looking at me like I'm mental.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think I had already.
If anyone works within the, you know,
DVLA.
DVLA, that's it. Then get in contact with me. DM me.
DM
me. Jump into my DMs and tell me that there's some sort of tiered system that I'm on now that I'm more likely to get.
Yeah, your numbers. Snapped. Number plates.
I once did one of those courses and we were asked why we had a speeding ticket, and I'm one of those people that I'm a Labrador. If someone asks me a question and there's a silence, I will stop talking.
Same.
And there was this, you know what it's like when you do one of those courses, just like the whole strata of like society. And there were these two young guys that kind of gravitated towards each other. I was just like, I've driven down that road thousands and thousands of times and I don't know what it was. I wasn't really concentrating and I forgot there was a camera. And these two guys just creased up laughing. They found it the funniest thing ever. And that was just really my honest response, was that I just forgot. I can't even remember why we were
just talking about speeding tickets. But
oh God.
But anyway, oh God, anyway, yeah. Speeding tickets, we're now, between us, we probably shouldn't have a license, but those are because of the people speeding on my road. But I have learned a lot from my speeding awareness course, a lot more than I thought, and I didn't know 1 mile an hour made such a difference, but I am much more mindful of it now. So now my aggression's even worse when people drive like twats on my road.
I actually found out some really important things in my speed. No, I had a speed awareness and then I had road safety one as well. And the road safety one, God, that makes me sound really bad. But the one thing that I actually, you know that thing where you think it's my right of way because of like the way that it's parked on the road or like the side that you're on? Actually, that's rubbish. You never have a right of way unless there is a sign saying give way. Like that whole like thing that we think it's our right of way because the parked cars are on like one side of the road. Do you know what I mean? That is
they told me that is rubbish.
Well, no. So say you're driving, like you're driving up the road,
yeah,
and there are parked cars on one side of the road, yeah, and you are driving up the side that has the parked cars.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's someone coming towards you. They automatically think that it's their right of way because the parked cars are on your side.
Oh no, I don't think that. That is a fallacy. Common courtesy.
Oh.
But that's going to come up. No, but it wouldn't
be.
No,
but it wouldn't be courtesy if it wasn't a rule. No. Anyway, that was just something that I learned, which apparently is something that I made up in my head.
There is no rule.
You don't think that. But
is there? Is there? No.
I don't know. That's interesting that you don't think that. But we do actually now.
We need to go.
Need to go.
All right.
We're waffling.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Lots of love.
Bye.
Bye.